on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, July 10th, 2025 edition, and we're almost into earnings season. Okay, and almost halfway through the month of July, right? One more trading day, then we get the weekend, and we're halfway there. So summer, as usual, is flying by. And regards to the markets and the economy, there's a lot of headlines. But for right now, we're kind of grinding higher. We'll dig into the details of today's show in a little bit. But ultimately, this show is not just about today. It's about what today can teach you, what mindset you can create so that you can make consistently good decisions with your money. And our job is to bring you data and perspective so that you can think about your situation dynamically, not just going out there on the internet trying to find tips. It's really about understanding the facts on the ground and staying grounded in your framework, not just following the narrative, because narratives change. What doesn't change is the fundamentals of businesses and markets, right? The fundamental guide that you should go by has to do with what is actually happening on the ground. Not using your preconceived biases that you bring because of maybe your political affiliation or the background that you grew up in, whether that's wealthy, middle class, poor, it doesn't matter. Market doesn't care about that. Okay, and that's what we are here to help you with, is to center you into what is tried and true when it comes to the investment world. And that is not using emotions, fear, and greed, right? But focusing on the facts. Because once again, that's what the market only cares about. It cares about the facts. So in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Invest Talk, Bill from Philadelphia here. I got a question regarding CDs and T-bills. So first question is, if I buy, say, a CD, 3-month CD at 5%, does that mean that I get a quarter of that 5%, 1/4 of that 5% after 3 months? If so, is it advantageous to keep buying those after every 3 months by another 3 months if that rate is at 5%, where the yearly would be at 4.2, for example? Just wanted to get your thoughts there. Thank you so much.
So the answer is yes. When you look at a rate on a CD, on, you know, yield to maturity on a bond or anything like that, you're looking at an annualized rate. So yes, if it says 5% and it's 3 months, it's a quarter of the year, you're talking about over that period, you'll earn 1.25%, right? A fourth of that 5%. So yes, that's how that works. Now, in an environment where when you're investing in shorter dated securities like this, whether that's a T-bill, whether that's a 3-month CD, those are all short dated. You have to remember, you have risk that rates, when they mature, will be lower. You know, as the Fed cut rates between now and the end of the year, or now and the next 3 months, that's certainly a possibility. The market is kind of pricing in a rate cut in September, and the bank that might be offering it after that cut may cut their expectation for or their offering for yield on that CD. That's why you have, if you go a year out, the yield is lower because that is the market or the bank looking at the odds in the marketplace that there will be rate cuts. And so that's kind of spreading out those rate cuts over the next year. And that's why you're only getting 4%. Now, basically, if they're yielding 5% over 3 months and 4% over a year, they're actually pricing in that the market or the Fed will cut rates below 4% over the next year, right? Because you have to average that out over the full year. And based on what seems to be indicated from the Trump administration is that they will continue, they will bring in a Fed president that will be more aggressive on rate cuts. Now, will they go all the way to 1% or 2%? Maybe not, but, you know, quickly going from maybe 4, 3.5 when the new Fed president takes the helm, the Fed in May of next year, you know, maybe it drops to 3 or 2.5 or something like that. So we'll see. But clearly that's what the banks and the market are signaling, that there will be aggressive rate cuts. And when you stick with those shorter dated securities, you risk that there will be aggressive rate cuts, and now your reinvestments will be at much lower rates. I would fade that a little bit. I do think that near term rates will stay higher than the market expects, but you never know. There's certainly risk of staying on the short end of the curve. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point, time permitted, has to do with Gen X and can they bank on the great wealth transfer for retirement. We know there's a lot of baby boomers retiring as well as aging out. And there will be and they own the vast majority of the assets in this country, from homes to equities, etc. And the big question is, how do you think about your inheritance potentially in the grand scheme of retirement planning? So we'll look at that topic. In addition, we have others on the docket as well. Copper looks to be subject to a 50% tariff starting August 1st. What would that mean for markets? Can we bring copper supply back to America? How difficult will that be? We'll look at that. Also, if you're looking for risks in the market, we talk about private equity and private debt, but there is probably another area of the public markets that is less talked about. And everyone talks about the Mag 7, and their prospects certainly are important, especially the broader market because of that weighting. But when it comes to the broader economy, it's actually some of the smaller names that could cause a problem. And we call that in our world Ponzi companies, companies that don't produce cash flow to sustain themselves. And if they suddenly can't get financing or their businesses take a turn for the worse, you could see layoffs, you could see bankruptcies. And I think that's an important aspect to discuss and cover. So we'll dig into that story as well. So those are the topics that are on the docket for me, but it's less about me and more about you. And that's why we are going to answer your voice bank questions. One is on Range Nuclear Renaissance Index, ETF, NUKZ, as well as INQQ, which is the India Internet ETF. We'll dig into those questions as well as questions that came in via the comment section over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. But most importantly will be your live calls. So if you're listening now or after hours, it's okay. You call 888-99-CHART. We will get you to the front of the line as fast as possible. No question is too simple or too complex, so I welcome all of your finance and investment questions. But we're going to head into a break. Now, on the other side, you will set the agenda if you give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein,
and that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a look at the market today. And it was a positive day overall, but very interesting. Yesterday we had growth really outperforming, doing well. Today was the exact opposite. Value did much, much better. Small cap value up nearly 1%. Whereas large cap growth was down nearly 0.5%. Okay, so kind of a big difference there. Overall, the S&P was up about 0.25%. NASDAQ eked out a gain of 9 basis points, 0.09% there. And there was a lot of movement underneath the surface. If you look at some of the even big tech names, Meta and Broadcom were down, Apple, Nvidia up a little bit, Microsoft down a little bit as well, but Walmart down over 2%, Costco down 1.2%. But a lot of the other tech names really hurting. Palo Alto Networks down 6.8% on the day, Netflix down nearly 3%, Intuit down nearly 3%, Now down 4.5%, Accenture down over 3% there. So a lot on the tech side, certainly struggling, even if the overall Mag 7 did just fine overall. So pretty interesting day. We still are in this kind of choppy environment over the last, let's call it week, this entire week. And we're heading into earnings season. And next week we have OpEx. You had some economic news. Once again, this week, not a lot of economic news. A ton last week, not a lot this week. But you always have those weekly numbers from the initial and continuing claims. So a lot of you focus on the initial claims, and that actually came back down. We're back down to sub 230,000, came in at 227,000 on the initial jobless claims, down from last week's 232. So back into levels that we saw in May, around the 230 mark. We peaked out recently around 250, okay? But if you head over to the continuing claims, I talk about this all the time, it's far more important. It's how many people are staying on the unemployment doles. And that actually ticked to a new high, barely, 1.965 from the previous high 2 weeks ago was 1.964, so a small uptick, but still, the continuation of the rise in those that are on the unemployment dole. So the labor market not really improving, not accelerating into worse territory, but not really improving either. So that's kind of where we are at, and we'll get a lot more economic news and, more importantly, news from these companies. First off, the tariffs. How's that impacting their business, their profit margins, the demand for their products, pricing of their products, etc. And then their expectations going forward. What does the demand look like so far in the third quarter? Right, we're only a couple weeks in, but you know, you start to get a good gauge of your business in the first few weeks of the quarter. And so the earnings season will tell us a lot about kind of the economic trajectory overall. What else happened on in today's market? You had the gold finished up 0.1%. No, not a big move there. Bitcoin was up 1.3%. You continue to see strength there. The treasuries overall a little bit weaker, so a little bit higher rates overall. And what else did we get? WTI, it was down 2.6%. Natural gas prices were higher. Okay, so but oil was down after OPEC trimmed near-term demand forecasts. So that was the market today. Overall green, but certainly mixed if you look at kind of the subsectors and the style factors within the market. Now we're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Have you ever heard of the Great Wealth Transfer? Well, that's something that a lot of people in our industry have talked about, because you have the boomer generation. A lot of them had been, continue to be with big broker, big wirehouses, we call them, the Morgan Stanleys and Merrill Lynches of the world. And when they pass, oftentimes their children get that money and they move to more independent advisors like us. And for us, that's been a good thing. We have seen that, certainly. But the $84 trillion that's been projected to transfer between now and 2045 will help a lot of, especially Gen Xers. That's the main generation that will inherit this wealth. Some millennials, but mainly Gen Xers. While it will be important for many of them, for a lot of others, they're likely to be disappointed in how much they will actually get for multiple reasons, which we'll dig into here in a little bit. And the first reason is most of this $84 trillion is among the ultra wealthy, meaning that it's a small segment of the next generation that's really going to get these assets. And those that might seem, you know, those boomers that might seem very wealthy, due to high living costs, inflation that we're seeing now, extended retirement years, just the life expectancies really extending, especially for those that have money to spend on doctors and treatments and therapies and all the things that can keep them healthier longer. Those innovations and those offerings are simply growing. And those two factors mean that between retirement and death is just longer than it used to be and more expensive, especially because as you stay healthier, you're able to travel more, do things that are more expensive, right? Once you hit your slow years of retirement, you know, call it 80 plus, 85 plus, you don't spend a lot of money unless you're in a nursing home, you know, home care, things like that. You're not traveling. You're not buying expensive cars, things like that. You kind of stay in place and just try to hang on is kind of what happens. Now, there are caveats for sure, but that's generally the trend. So for Gen Xers, the wealth that a lot of the boomer generation received from the silent generation, their parents, they're not going to see the same level of inheritance, most likely. Now, the good news for Gen Xers is they're in the peak earnings years. So it's far more important to take advantage of those years than to rely on really getting a ton of money from the boomer generation. Now, a typical retirement savings rate is 10 to 20%. So for most that are maybe feel a bit behind in retirement, especially in the Gen X generation, probably should up that into the 20 to 30% range. Just so you can reach your freedom number. And everyone should kind of have that. And this is what working with an advisor can help with, is what is that freedom number? Both in dollar amount and then at what age? Right? Because your freedom number is going to depend on what age you want to stop working. And the freedom number is really about what is your amount of money that's needed to sustain your desired retirement lifestyle with a cushion, right? You always want to have a cushion. You don't know the outcomes of the investment world, the inflation dynamics in the economy, especially with our debt, right? So relying on the boomer generation to really create that wealth for that next generation, I think is something most people don't fully grasp. They don't grasp how much they're going to get, if anything at all. And it's not a conversation that most have with their parents, even though they should. I think that something every parent, child should, you know, in their, you know, if you're over the age of, say, 60, should be talking about this, even younger than that, because you never know what can happen. So you want to have the will and trust laid out, fully understood by the executor, so everything is clear at an age where the parents can have a clear mind, not deep into their 80s when there could be some sort of maybe legal challenge. You want to do this at a younger age where it can't be argued that you're speaking in a with a clear mind, with your clear intentions, not encumbered by somebody else that might come in to try to convince you one way or the other. Because I see that all the time. And so the sooner you can lay that out for multiple people, and especially the executor, the clearer you'll get your wishes handed off. And for those that are younger, I encourage you to encourage your parents to come forward and explain those intentions as well. Now we're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your calls on Invest Talk now at 888-99-CHART. No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code INVEST for 15% off. Longer days, warmer nights, and you deserve a mattress that keeps up. Avocado Green Mattress uses organic materials that naturally help you sleep cooler, so you can wake up refreshed. It's true. All avocado mattresses are crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. breathable materials that are free from harmful chemicals and allow you to sleep cooler. Avocado mattresses are designed to provide exceptional comfort and support, with options ranging from gentle firm to plush, meeting diverse sleep needs and preferences. You can even try before you buy. Visit one of their retail stores or premier retail partners to experience the Avocado Green mattress comfort in person. To make your purchase more accessible, there are easy financing options with Affirm. So, for better sleep, through breathable, naturally temperature-regulating materials, which can improve overall well-being, head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and check out their mattress and bedding sale. Avocado, dream of better.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Luke and Justin. My name is Kay from New York. I'm just calling about two stocks. One of them called Nukes, N-U-K-Z, and another I-N-Q-Q. Thank you so much. Look forward to your insight. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at INQQ as well as NUKZ. So these are actually not stocks. These are ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And this is NUKZ is Range Nuclear Renaissance. What's interesting here is about 40% U.S. stocks, 60% U.S. stocks, 40% domestic. Excuse me, 40% foreign. There we go. As you would imagine, the largest holding is Cameco, 10%. There are 44 different holdings. You get a lot of industrials. 51% are industrials. I kind of like that. 30% are utilities. 13% energy. So that would be nuclear. And this is actually more along the lines of companies that you, in the industrial space, like I said, as opposed to some of the other URNM, URA, those are mainly uranium mining companies. And there's a lot of small ones that are exploratory. They don't have much, if any, revenue. And I don't love that. So I would rather own, if I'm looking for kind of broad-based exposure, I would rather own a lot of the companies in this ETF. Now, I'll preface this with saying a lot of them are expensive, you know, they've gone up. But to me, this is a great list. There are 44 holdings. They're public. You can go on Morningstar or go on their website. Range is the provider of the ETF. And look at the holdings. The top holding, like I said, is Cameco, Constellation Energy, GE Vernova, Centrist Energy, New Scale Power, Oklo, Rolls-Royce, Vistra, Curtis Wright, and Samsung C&T are the top 10 holdings there. So I would look at that as well as the rest of the 44 and try to find the best there. But if I don't want to do that work, you want broad-based exposure, I kind of like it. Now, the other one is INQQ. This is the India Internet ETF. So first off, I like the fact that it's focusing on India. Okay. I don't necessarily like the fact that it's internet focused. Now, I look at the spread here, and this is a good example. Well, it says the India Internet ETF. I'm looking at the sectors, and only 13% is in technology, 13% is in communication services, 31% is in financial services, 32% in consumer cyclicals of some kind. So it is a bit more spread out, which I like that than just being internet focused, okay? So I don't mind it. I probably would rather go with a broader base India ETF and not just bet on these few sectors. Also, the expense ratio is pretty high, 86 basis points there. There's just better options to me to go and get exposure to the Indian market that are a bit cheaper. For example, INDA, this is the iShares MSCI India ETF. 62 basis points is the expense ratio there. You're going to get more diversity. I like betting on India, but I wouldn't use INQQ as necessarily the vehicle to accomplish that. I want a little more. I want it to be a little more spread out. Okay. Thanks for the call. Now, every day we get received questions from the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. So let's tackle one of those now. And Gil Tel Aviv says, I'm looking to buy some shares of BJ's. I wonder, what do you think about this opportunity? Looking at BJ's Wholesale. So this is kind of a smaller Costco. Similarly, a strongly profitable business, a consistent business, and it's cheaper. It trades at cheaper valuations than Costco. The problem is that it's still a little bit more of a premium that I would like to pay. Earnings this year are supposed to go up 6%, 9% next year. You know, decent growth. Last quarter, revenue is up 5%. I like their balance sheet. You don't get a dividend here, which I don't think is that big of a deal. But I like the name. I just don't like actually the chart right now. It peaked back in May 22nd, it looks like. Yep. And it started a downtrend ever since, making a series of lower highs and lower lows. The MACD is below the zero line. So it is in at least a short-term downtrend. Let me give you a support level that would get me interested in this name, because I do like the business. I like that it has more room to run, to grow than, say, a Costco. And it has a good balance sheet, which means that, you know, it can finance. It can use that cash flow, about $300 million in free cash flow trailing 12 months, to expand, not to service its debt, for example. And I look at enterprise value to EBITDA. This is the highest it's been out of the last, since it's peaked, right? It peaked at about nearly 16, which is the highest that's traded at in the last 10 years. Now it's down to 13.6. But if you look over the last 10 years, it tends to trade closer to 10 times enterprise value to EBITDA. You're talking about a 20 to 30% drop from here, which would put you in the 80s. And that's where I would pick it up. The low 80s, 82 and change is a good support area, and that's where I would pick it up. You know, between the 80 and 85 level, that's where I would be buying BJ's Wholesale. Thanks for the call. Or thanks for the question. That wasn't a call. That was a comment question over on our YouTube channel. Well, let's talk a little bit about Ponzi Finance. Ponzi Finance. And this is something that Hyman Minsky, the great economist, talked a lot about. And that is when a larger share of those within the economy, entities within the economy, are vulnerable to shocks, such as unexpected increases in tariffs, maybe a war, maybe immigration crackdowns larger than expected. There's a lot that could kind of spark a downtrend. And they are more susceptible to those, because when uncertainty rises, being able to finance yourself becomes very, very important. Financing yourself with your own cash flow. So I talk about companies with good balance sheets and positive cash flow. Unfortunately, more and more of companies, not just in the private equity and private debt space, which I talk about a lot, and I think that's likely to be an epicenter of problems. They're just harder to see because you don't know their financial situation. They're not public. But there are plenty of public companies that are in what we call a Ponzi position. It means that they cannot, once again, finance their business, their growth, with cash flow. Most of the time, their cash flow is negative. And so they're reliant on outside capital continually being raised in order for them to stay in business. And so this is not the big companies. This is not the Mag 7. We know the Mag 7, they have good cash flows. They have good balance sheets. Maybe some of them are overvalued, but they are susceptible to the problems that some of the smaller firms actually could find themselves in. So if you look here, the percentage of small firms by financing regime. And so there's three different types. One is called Ponzi. The other is speculative. And the other is hedged. So hedges, you're fine. You have plenty of cash flow to finance yourself. Speculative is you're kind of borderline. You're not wholly reliant on outside capital, but you're also not knocking it out of the park. You know, you have leverage to pull when things get rough without having to tap the rest of the market. But if things get really bad, you could fall into the Ponzi category. That's speculative. Now, of the smaller firms, the bottom quartile of firms in the public markets, about nearly 80%, let's call it 75% of them, are Ponzi. Well, the top quartile, the top 25%, only about 5% of them would be considered Ponzi. Of the bottom quartile, about 5% are fine, hedge, and about 15% are speculative. And then, like I said, around 80% are Ponzi. So it just shows you that there's a large section of even the public markets who have business models that are not exactly resilient, shall we say. And this is very similar to kind of the 2000 era. When the internet bubble popped, and many of those small internet companies and upstart telecom firms, they went bust. They carried too much debt, and they lived off of the story, the narrative that allowed them to go public. You know, they threw a .com on the end of their name and they got huge valuations without the market caring, at the time at least, whether their business model was reasonable or not. And when that tide turned, you had a wave of job losses and that capital evaporated. So you see that a lot now, where there's a lot of correlation with big tech, anything crypto related. Think of the typical portfolio a average millennial or Gen Z investor will have, focusing a lot on AI, tech, crypto, that whole ecosystem, because that's how they invest, based on narrative more than anything. And so if certain names start to go under, well, if you have a leveraged balance sheet, you need to sell other names. In addition, when I say other names, typically those bigger names. And then in addition, a lot of those smaller names pay the Apples and the Googles and the Amazons and the Microsofts of the world for their products and services. But they might advertise on Google and Meta. They might buy products from Apple. They might subscribe to Microsoft 365 and other services in Azure from Microsoft. And suddenly their ability to buy from them goes away. And that's what happened back in 2000. Earnings multiples for those large publicly traded companies came down because earnings growth shrank. And between 2001 and 2010, the percentage of small businesses with negative operating cash flow declined considerably because those companies no longer were able to raise capital. They weren't able to stay public. So they either went bankrupt, they sold, or they just didn't hit the market. And so if you're talking about risks out there, that's one of the bigger risks. Now let's play another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Matt in Florida. I had a question about buying a mutual fund within an IRA. I've been trying to max out my IRA every year, and I'm 31 years old. I've been buying the VTTSX. It's been doing pretty well so far. It's a target-dated retirement account that will start to shift more towards bonds in 2060. It has a pretty low expense ratio of about 0.08%, and it has about 50% of the Vanguard total stock market index being more weighted in tech, and 37% of the international stock market index with some emerging markets, and mostly Japan, about 15%. I'm just curious your opinion on the strategy for buying this mutual fund in my IRA as I maximize it every year. Thank you very much and have a good day.
All right, looking at the Vanguard Target Retirement 2060 fund, and on the face of it, no issue, right? Pretty broad-based exposure. U.S. equities, non-U.S. equities, 36%, U.S. equities, 53%, about 8% or so, I'm going to call it 10% between fixed income and cash. So that makes sense from an asset allocation standpoint. But what you're doing is also you're going along the lines of the just investing in the index. And I talked before about I much rather own something that is equally weighted. History says that they hold up better through cycles, you know, in an up cycle and an uptrend. These are going to do fine. It's that downtrend where something that's more equally weighted will do better. Now, if you don't want to do the research, you don't want to make those changes regularly for yourself, this is going to do that for you over time. That's how target dated funds work. Each year that goes by, they reduce their equity exposure a little bit, up their bond exposure a little bit. The problem is they don't pay attention to valuation trends or anything like that. For example, they're invested in the total bond market index. And whatever duration that's going to have, that's what you're going to get. And so that's not necessarily the way I would do it. But if you don't want to do any work at all and you just want to go kind of with the broader index, you're getting low fee here. And there's no real issue with that. But you can do much better if you were to be a little smarter with the allocation. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, is help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
This is Matt from Minneapolis. I'm looking at the ETF fund here, FNDF. It's an international traded fund with overseas companies, I believe. I have no international trades or any national funds, I should say, in my portfolio whatsoever. It's all just United States. I was wondering if this would be something that would help me in my portfolio diversification, and if international funds would be something good to get into right now. Thank you for your answers. I look forward to listening and hearing it on the show.
Yes, I absolutely think this is, if you have no foreign exposure, you definitely want to look at an ETF like this. Simply from a currency hedge perspective, you know, if the dollar continues to decline, which if you look at our fiscal situation and likely financial repression continuing and lowering of interest rates, you're probably seeing the dollar decline considerably, especially if President Trump wants to accomplish his goal of reshoring manufacturing. A big part of that is going to be bringing the value of the dollar lower to make our goods more competitive. This is standard operating procedure around the world for economies that want to juice their domestic production and domestic demand. So yes, foreign exposure will help you mitigate some of those losses, right? They'll outperform generally, just as it did this year so far, the domestic indices. And so this is FNDF. This is the Schwab Fundamental International Equity ETF, pretty much all foreign companies, 923 different names, so broadly diversified. That's good. 17% is in industrial, 19% is in financial. Those are the two highest weightings. Technology is at 7.5%. So you're getting diversity there away from those broader indices, which are very heavily in technology. So I definitely like that. And it's a large cap value leaning fund. So you're getting companies that generally are cheaper than what you're getting domestically. And so I'm a big fan of using something that maybe this is the best fund out there, but it's a good fund. And I would certainly be allocating some of your U.S. equity exposure over to this name. Thanks for the call. Lastly, let's talk about these 50% copper tariffs that are being threatened by President Trump. Now, we know he throws out big numbers, and then he comes to something that is a bit more reasonable when it comes to these tariff levels. But the issue with copper and really most of these raw commodities is that the lead time to produce domestically is oftentimes many years. And copper is the perfect example. To get a mine up and running takes at least three years, sometimes up to a decade, depending on the difficulty, permitting, all of that. Now, there's still a lot of details to be ironed out here. What is the definition of copper? Is there a scope for some sort of exemptions or lower rates for some major suppliers like Chile or Canada? Those are some big questions that still need to be figured out. You know, that's kind of the Trump's way. It's saying something big. There's big headlines, but not a whole lot of details. And this is vital to our domestic manufacturing economy, because copper goes into so many things, from electric vehicles to military hardware, semiconductors, pretty much anything that's electronic. So almost every consumer good now, right? Because there's some electronic nature to almost every consumer good. And the reality is that domestic mining capabilities are very limited. So to meaningfully boost that is going to take many, many years, probably past this Trump presidency. We import about half of our copper right now. And so if this is going to be implemented, there's certainly going to be a push higher in costs for a lot of different goods. So it's going to be inflationary. It could limit some sort of the jobs market as well, because once again, if you don't have that copper becomes more expensive, those prices of those goods are going to go up, and that means simple supply demand will go down a bit. And already copper is up 10% this year. So I think those trends will continue, and I don't think this particular policy is going to be beneficial to the economy overall. I'm Justin Klein. This is another Invest Talk program. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, your asset allocation, your taxes, your retirement planning, etc., I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button and schedule a no-cost portfolio review with myself or Luke. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about a free podcast download, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking should success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security.